Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters: your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hut, 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 hut. I'm hearing hut, hut, hut in my sleep, Chip Scoggins. Welcome, Scott Korzenowski in for Chad Hartman. We're joined by Chip Scoggins, columnist for the Star Tribune. And I'm not kidding you. I think I woke up with sweats hearing hut, 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 hut. I mean, that was absurd.
How you doing, Corzo?
I'm doing great. Other than, I'm old enough now that I can find the humor in these things, because it was humorous. It's ironic that when they were in Detroit, they had like one false start, and the Lions had like three or four, and then the Vikings get home and they've got eight. And I don't know. My sense is when I heard KOC and everybody, because what's the number one rule you can't do over at TCO Performance Center? You can't blame JJ for anything, okay? So they're going out of their way, and I'm fine with that. I don't need them coming out and saying, JJ, this. I think that's fine that they do that. I think that's smart that they do that. But I get the sense that JJ, I mean, what's the most common denominator on eight false starts? It's the quarterback's the one doing the cadence, right? Because all different guys are jumping at different times.
Well, I will say I saw an all-timer yesterday. I don't think I've ever seen a quarterback get a false
start
before yesterday. I don't think I've ever seen that, which pretty much summed up the day. Yeah, eight false starts when you're at home is hard to do. You have to really try to be that bad at it. And whether it was something the Ravens were doing, trying to mimic the calls, whether it was J.J., the way his cadence was confusing his guys. But didn't they practice that? Like, isn't that something you rehearse and go over? Like, we're going to try a hard count here, or we're going to do this. I mean, you think with veterans, I mean, they only have one young guy on the line, that veterans should know better. So I don't know. It was just an undisciplined performance by really all the way around, but by the offensive line particularly, and you know, the turnovers, it was just sloppy. I mean, that was a game that if you play well and lose, fine. But if you have that many penalties and that many turnovers, it's hard to live with.
And the defense really held Lamar Jackson in check. You look at his numbers, their strategy was, I talked about on my Sunday show, that their strategy had to be different from Jared Goff, where they attacked him up the middle because Jared Goff can't move. And I said their job with Lamar has to be to keep him in the pocket. And boy, they kept him in the pocket extremely well. And then he had receivers dropping passes, and he threw a couple of bad passes, and they put some pressure on him. I mean, the defense played very well, okay? They played very well. But the problem is, I don't remember, I mean, I didn't have time today to look it up, but 22 incompletions in an NFL game? 22 incompletions? I mean, I bet we might have to go back to the Josh Freeman game to see that many incompletions in a game. I mean, that's the biggest concern I have, is that JJ is accuracy is really, it seems to be getting worse rather than better.
Well, and the way he started, he was on point, right?
Yes.
I mean, he was that first drive. You're like, okay, he's dialed in, and we've seen this before. Mm-hmm. And it goes back to what I think a couple weeks ago when they came back from Europe. If you remember, KO was talking about, they basically used that bye week. It was just him and JJ and, maybe McGowan was out there. It was almost like a quarterback camp where they're working on his fundamentals. And he said something. He's like, McCarthy can be an accurate passer when his mechanics are, if everything, he calls it balanced body and all these things. But we've seen when it's not, and he tends to throw high, right? We saw that a couple times again yesterday. He airmailed Jefferson. I know the one late in the game, right along the sideline. He's wide open. He just throws it 5 feet over his head. And so I don't know if he gets overexcited. I don't know if it's his mechanics fail him or what it is, but he has a tendency just to lose his accuracy. And, you know, I'm sure it's something they're talking about and trying to figure out the root of it. And I think O'Connell always goes back to fundamentals with those things. But you're right. When you have that many incompletions, and so, you know, there are a few of them that are drops, but when you have that many incompletions, I mean, something's going wrong. And it also speaks to, then why are you, and I understand that, you know, you got Justin Jefferson one-on-one on the outside, on the post, down the middle, but when it's third and a foot or inches or whatever, why are you trying that? Just run the ball, right? Just run the ball.
Yeah.
I don't understand why he just is so averse to running the ball in short yardage.
To me, I think this goes back to, look, I'm going to be critical of KOC on certain things, okay? But I like KOC as a coach. I think we all do, okay? I don't think anyone's saying fire KOC. That's not even remotely in the conversation, okay? But that doesn't mean, I think one of the things that, I think KOC has a KOC offense. And we all remember when the Pastrnak came on board, Josh Dobbs, and he had like two or three games where he's running around like a chicken with his head cut off, and we were all loving it. We're going, this is great. This is kind of like, it's fantastic. We had a quarterback in Kirk who can't move at all, and he's winning. And then all of a sudden, they play against the Raiders, and the Pastrnak never leaves the pocket, and they score 3 points. I mean, it's like KOC was trying to turn the Pastrnak into Kirk, into Cousins, and can't do that. And I think that KOC needs to start JJ at the remedial level, and then move up to the expert level. And I think he expects him to do these expert plays too that take a lot more, where he's confident in his footwork. I think he gets inaccurate when he doesn't have his feet under him. When he's running, he always throws it high. And when he's not where he's got the nice platform to throw, he's not able to throw accurate passes. Most quarterbacks aren't, right? Lamar Jackson's different. Mahomes is different. But most quarterbacks have to have their footwork, and they can get it. And when he gets out of the pocket and he doesn't really know what he's doing, it doesn't work very well when he throws the ball right now.
Well, it is. And what was the whole premise of this season, though, Corso? Like, they went out and they got a running back, a power running back, right?
Yep.
And Jordan Mason, they upgraded the offensive line. Now, obviously, the center's not there, but everybody else is there right now. And it was under the whole premise of they're going to be better running the ball in short yardage situations, in the low red zone, in those type of things where they weren't equipped to do that last year. They felt like they were equipped to do it this year. And I guess he's just, you know, the play caller, he gets in those situations, it's hard to change who you are. He still wants to go for the kill shot. He still wants to go for that home run play. And I understand you have Justin Jefferson, and you feel like anytime he's got a single coverage on him, you want to throw to him and let him make the play. But at some point you have to depend on your running game more. And we've just seen it time and again this year where he hasn't. And that, you know, the first one where, you know, they don't do it. And then McCarthy makes a bad decision on one that leads to an interception, just throwing it up for grabs there. The other one, you know, okay, Jefferson falls down or trips, and it's, you know, that's not anyone's fault per se, but I would just rather them be more balanced and not, I understand the logic, right? You want to put McCarthy in these situations where he has to sink or swim, so to speak, right? You're trying to develop him. But you also, like, have to understand the game situation, too. And, like, it just seems like it'd be more practical to run in those situations and get a first down and then, you know, try to keep the chains moving that way. So it's, for all the talk we heard about, this is going to be a more power running team. They're going to rely on it more. It just hasn't proven to be that at all.
It just shows you that, and I knew that this bothered me at the time, when losing all of last year for JJ playing. So now we're in year two out of, you know, the 5-year window, right? And and you know, if last year had been going on now, maybe by now he'd figure it out. Look, after four games, I am not pulling the plug on JJ McCarthy, and I still think he's going to be good. But I guess is the best thing to do is to, you know, I just say that, hey, when you start skiing, if any of you are from the snow skier, you start on the bunny hill, right? And once you get the bunny hill, you go to the blue hill. And then once you get a little bit better, you go to the double blue hill. But you got to be able to be steady on your skis before you go to the black diamond, right? And my thought is that he's got him playing the black diamond. He's figuring he's good enough to play the black diamond, and he's not right now. And there's no shame in that, right? There needs to be some work done to do it. I mean, Drake Mays played 25 games, and you see it. You see him blossoming this year with good coaching, but he wasn't blossoming last year because he didn't have good coaching. Anyway, I'm not going to give up on JJ. I'm just saying that the one thing I really want to see is I want to see JJ play 8 more games. And that's why, as a fan, I'm not expecting anything. I just want to see JJ play 8 games and be healthy and see what he looks like at the end of the year. And we may be great, and he may still be bad. We may not have all of our answers, but I'm just hopeful that they can do that. And I would like to see Kevin give him a little more ease along the line, a little more ease. Like I said, running on 3rd-and-1. By the way, when they got down into on the 5-yard line, the only time they really got that deep where the ball was, they ran the ball in for a touchdown, right?
Yeah.
They did. And so it's not like they can't do it.
Yeah. Well, when JJ came back, someone said, you asked me, what do you hope to see? And my first response was him play 10 games,
yep.
Number one. That's the number one thing. Him play 10 games and show that he can stay healthy. And then I think at the end of it, get to the end of the season and then answer, what does he do well? Like, what are his strengths? I think you have to be able to know that when you get to the end of the season. Like, what are you building around? What does he do well? Those two things to me are the most important right now.
It is. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, I will talk about some sports other than your Vikings. We'll talk a little bit about the Wolves. Are they starting to wake up from a slumber, or is it just a matter they're playing some lousy teams? We'll talk about that. Maybe a little Wild, maybe Twins, whatever Chip wants to talk about, we'll talk about. Maybe a little bit Tennessee. And I do want to talk to Chip a little bit about college football and the experience I had watching that Indiana-Penn State game. When we come back here on 830 WCCO.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters, your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. Korzenowski in for Hartman today. Harrigan here, and we're joined by Chip Scoggins for a second segment. We spent the last segment breaking down your Vikings, last night at the start of that game, the Wolves game, when they got Rudy like 6 quick hoops, by lobbing it to him on fast breaks and other things, I'm sitting there going to myself, that is the formula. Because love it or not, when Rudy gets ignored, it affects his defense. And I know he says he's aware of it and he doesn't do it, but when they got him going and Rudy was a monster the rest of that game and they made quick work of the Sacramento Kings.
Well, when you remember early in the game, I'd been the second possession or so where he led the fast break or whatever.
Yes.
He had the field, he drove down there, did the layup. And
yeah.
Probably not coincidentally, then he had 3 quick blocks the rest of that quarter. You're right. When you can get him in those situations where you're alley-ooping to him, he's getting dunks, it is going to energize him. And I mean, obviously, Sacramento's awful. Like,
yeah.
The team's not very good.
What happened? They got rid of De'Aaron Fox, of course. I mean, they were right there with the Wolves a couple of years ago, on the verge of being good. And, now they basically have Sabonis, and they have, the former Wolf, he was pouring him in last
Zach
night.
Levine.
Zach Levine.
Yeah.
And then you got.
That's about it.
And then DeRozan's okay, and Monk. That's about it.
Monk.
But who usually kills the Wolves and didn't do anything last night. So
no, their defense was good. The energy, obviously, Ant didn't score a lot early and then turned it on in the second quarter and it was basically over. But the thing that I think, obviously, they need to be good teams and not just the bad teams and beat them up. But the way they're shooting it, I mean, they're, what, second in the league in 3-point shooting? They're really shooting it well from the three. So if they can sustain that and get back to their defensive identity that we saw a couple years ago and be tough to go against, then you think they'll climb out of it. But again, they need to show it against the good teams and not just be beating up on the bad teams. But this is it is a nice sign that they're starting to play better and bury those teams and not just let them hang around.
I'll tell you who's playing great. I mean, there's a couple of Julius Randle is playing great. The game the other night, I was talking on my show Sunday when he passed. You had 38-year-old Joe Ingles passing the ball to Johan Berenguer. 20-year difference. I love that. So I love that Joe Ingles got an assist to Berenguer for a dunk. That was great. It was a lot of fun to see.
Yeah, I mean, Julius is, I mean, he's playing, I mean, he's getting what, had two triple doubles.
Yes.
To me, the key, though, Corzo, is Jaden McDaniels.
Yep, he's been
great.
I
mean, when he plays this way, and he's playing really good, he's playing at a high level. To me, he's always been the X factor. We've always talked about his scoring, like when he gets X number of shots, they tend to win, right? But just, you know, and it happened last year when they had injuries, he had to step up and you know, we saw his scoring blossom, and we saw it again this year when Ant was out. When he's adding the scoring element to it and the playmaking, because he's such a unique player, I just think he's the X factor and makes him different. So the way he's playing along with Julius, I think, you know, that can be their identity, because Ant's going to do what he does. Like, he's going to be great, right, and score a lot. So, but when you get Jaden being that third guy, now all of a sudden they can be that much more difficult to defend.
I'll tell you what I love about Jaden. He's discovered his offensive game, meaning he takes the mid-range shots from in the paint, which are such difficult shots. He almost never misses them because he's so long. He arches his back and no one can touch him, and he's super confident. And anytime he takes those little, when he gets the ball in the paint, I'm going, don't pass it. You take whatever shot you want because you're really good at it. And then he will take wide open threes. But like last night, he took three threes. That's the right number for him because he's not a great three-point shooter, but he's shooting them better this year. But he has found his game. He makes the living in the paint, right? And then if you leave him wide open, especially the more clutch it is, the more likely he is to make it. And how many games have we seen where they're leaking some oil, and boy, they really need a three, and there's Jaden knocking one down from the corner?
Well, that's it. I mean, he just expanded his game. Because I remember a couple years ago in the playoffs when Luka was with Dallas, Jaden was basically standing in the corner. Luka was guarding no one because they were just going to be content to let him shoot that corner three. And he just didn't have the confidence. But when he's driving and using, because he's so, is it unorthodox? Is that the word? When he's driving and hard and long, that when he gets to that spot, he's scoring, right? So he's totally added an element to his game through hard work. And so as he continues to do that and gets more and more confidence in his offensive ability, because you know he's going to play hard defense and be a disruptor there, I just think that makes him a much different team. Like, when he's giving him that kind of scoring and ability to get his own shot and create when he gets to the lane, he can be a really dynamic player.
But like you said, they still haven't beaten a good team. Now, before I let you go, I know you're a big college football fan. Given that the Gophers have been, you know, I don't usually sit down on a Saturday and watch a lot of college football, but I'll tell you what, I was flying back on a plane a couple Saturdays ago, and they had TV on, and I was watching, and it was all SEC games, and I watched the SEC, and I realized the reason the SEC is so great is because they have so many doggone great quarterbacks. Okay. And then I sat down and I was going to watch the Indiana game because I love Indiana, because it's kind of like, as being a Gopher fan, it's like Indiana's like the Gophers' brother. They're the same crappy program forever, and now they're at the top of the field. And Gus Johnson was calling the game. So when I can watch a game with Gus Johnson calling it, and I know he's, a lot of people hate him, I absolutely love him. And I don't know if you, when they came back, Indiana came back, and Mendoza was put on an unbelievable show, and that guy made an unbelievable catch. And did you hear the call? I mean, just Johnson, his voice like went, he sounded like a little girl screaming. It was hilarious. I thought he was going to die.
I saw a tweet where someone said, check on Gus Johnson.
Yes.
And I don't know if Mendoza, he's one of the two probably leaders for the Heisman right now with Simpson, the Bama quarterback.
Yep.
But every Heisman winner has that moment, right? You have to have that on your resume, that moment, that Heisman moment that we call it. And that will be his, because you're down in Happy Valley and you have to have a touchdown drive there. And just the number of plays he made to get him down there. And then the final one, the catch. I mean, I don't know what's better, the throw. Well, the catch was better. But the throw was, because he's getting drilled as he's throwing it. But that catch by the receiver was just an all-timer. I mean, that's one of the best catches you're ever going to see in that situation, considering the magnitude of the game. So, yeah, I mean, it was and then Gus's call lived up to the play.
It was great.
The
funny thing was, I'm watching with my wife, and I said, you got to listen to this Gus Johnson guy. And, I mean, I remember I went back and I looked it up. I said, I think he started with the Timberwolves, and I looked it up. He did. And she was loving it too. And when that touchdown went one, we were both ecstatic because we wanted Indiana to win. But she was just, we were both just laughing out loud. I mean, that was such a joyful moment. That's perfect for, Gus is just perfect for college football. He really, really is. Now, before I let you go, your Tennessee Vols, are they, I think they're still in the running for the playoff. Are they not? Are they on the bubble?
Yeah, they're bubble. They need to win out. They've already had three losses. So they have to win out starting Saturday. This is one thing about the SEC that just sort of drives me crazy. They'll sprinkle in a non-conference game late in there. So the Vols play New Mexico State this week, yep, which kind of breaks the disruption of the thing. But, yeah, they need to go finish out and to be in the mix.
Well, great talking to you, Chip. I always like to fill in for Chad on a Monday so I can talk to Chip Scoggins. Thanks again, Chip.
All right, Corzo. See you, man.
See ya. Always the great Chip Scoggins, from StarTribune.com. Coming up, what do we got coming up here? We've got, I think I'm going to talk a little bit about baby boomers, of which I'm one, and how.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver. Ready for honest conversations about thriving in midlife? Listen to and follow my new podcast, Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
We are hogging everything. So, I am a baby boomer. I was born in 1960. They say that the baby boomers were 46 to 64. Do you know all the different generations?
We had the boomers.
So who came after the
Gen
boomers?
X, right?
Is that you, Gen X? When were you born?
No, I'm millennial. I'm at the upper end of millennial, so I'm one of the first millennials.
So right now there's the generation older than the baby boomers is the great generation.
The greatest generation.
Isn't that the ones that was, they were World War II people?
I think so.
Because since the baby boomers starts in 1946. So there's still some of them around, right? But they're obviously, you know, so the oldest would be 45, would be the oldest year. That's 15 years older than me. That's 80. So the youngest next generation, or greatest generation, is like 80. And then the youngest baby boomers just turned a little over, that was 64, so 4 years younger than me, so about 61.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it's what one of the things that, as being a baby boomer, that I realize as I get older, and I'm like the age of what my father was, and I'm sitting there to myself, my father seemed a lot older at 65 than I do, for a couple of reasons. One, like, he would dress really strangely. You know, I mean, you know what I mean? I mean, he wouldn't be like walking around in sweats like I am now, or like, you know, golf shorts that, you know, look good. And, you know, I mean, I look a lot younger than he looked then. I listened to this podcast once where they said, it just appears that people that were like they would look at these three guys have a podcast, and they're looking at these pictures from like the Notre Dame football program. And these guys all look like they're 40.
I know.
You know,
you'll see that in like baseball cards too. Somebody who's 23 at the time, they look like they're 52.
I think the baby boomer generation, it was hip. I mean, maybe not, but I think. I mean, like, I know our kids think my wife and I are pretty hip. We like to hang with them. We like to. Look, my parents are really fun too. I got to say, you know, they both passed, but they were. We'd get together and we would have a good time. You know, when we were older. We used to play a lot of card games, my dad was a really good card player, and he had all these hilarious statements that he would make. You know, one, if he got his handy, he'd always go, "Man, oh man, oh Manischewitz." That was one of his that he didn't have a very good hand. Or like, if you're playing like in the game that we played, we invented it. My dad's name was Ted Korsanowski. We all called him TK. We didn't call him Dad when we were adults. We called him TK, a very endearing term. My dad was a lot of fun, but he never looked cool. You know, in fact, he always was kind of one thing we have in common. I will say this: we're skiing. He bought us all skis back when our parents did when I was like 12, 13. We took a trip to Indian Head, and it was like a T-bar.
UP, right?
Yeah, I've been there many times. Do you've been on a T-bar?
Like, yes.
You just got to rest your butt on it. But you have to have a little balance. Mm-hmm. You know, your skis are on the ground. You got to kind of pay attention to what you're doing. It's not like a chairlift where you can sit up there and, you know, just sit. You have to. It's not difficult. It stops, right? And I'm sitting there with my sister. I go, TK. TK went down. So we get on, about halfway up. There he is at the side trying to get his skis on. That kind of stuff. You know, I once hurt my knee. I had to get knee surgery. The only knee surgery I ever had was I was trying to get a cooler out of a boat and onto the dock, and I twisted my knee. And so that's when my kids then got me a cooler that I don't have to lift. It's got the wheels on it. It's got the little handle. And
nice.
It's my cooler, right, that mm-hmm. I don't have to lift it too much anymore. So I get it. But I think that this story kind of gets to that the people that I'm around, some of my friends are starting to retire and stuff, but most of them are luckily in really good health, are still working, still live in our houses, you know, still, you know, and that's what this article says. Baby boomers are a giant generation with some 76 million babies born from 46 to 64. Over the course of their lifetimes, they've dominated American society from the 1950s childhoods to the rebellious 60s and 70s to the family-oriented 80s. So, like, I grew up in the 60s, so I was too young to be part of the rebellion, right? I'm like 60, you know, in 1967, I'm 7 years old. You know, I'm not out there, you know, smoking pot yet. And, you know.
You were close.
No, I was closer than you might have thought. But you know, the early 70s, the disco age,
sure.
Which we went through, the 80s with the big hair and all that. And so, but they're hanging in there. I mean, the boomers are hanging in there. What was the old sign that they used to say to boomers? What was it like? What was that? It's kind of like the kids saying 6'7". What was it about the baby boomers?
Like you just call somebody a boomer.
Oh, hey, boomer.
Just, hey, boomer.
Yeah.
Okay, boomer.
Yeah. So now here's what's going on. Some baby boomer executives, including Disney's Bob Iger, Starbucks' Howard Schultz, boomeranged back into the top job. The median age of the U.S. Senate is 65 years old. Median. I'll tell you what, the only time that I'm in a median age where it's over 65 is if there's some sort of a 5 o'clock dinner that you go to at Perkins.
Yes, the 4:30.
The 4:30 people. There used to be this restaurant called, it's in Little Canada by my house, and it was like a supper club, it's called. It's up on a hill. We went in there, and we were by far the youngest mm-hmm. people there. It wasn't even close. We didn't go back. I didn't like, although I should if I feel young. You know, I don't feel too young too often anymore. The country has yet to have a Gen X or millennial president. I mean, we're you know, I mean, look at our run. We had W, but that was way back. That was 25 years ago. And W was still young, right? That's 25 years ago. He was about 40, right? W is probably similar to my age, probably 65. And then we would go from W and then Obama. He was a baby boomer, I guess.
He's 64 now. I just looked him up.
So he's my age. So he's a boomer. And then obviously we've had Joe Biden and Trump, both older than they're not even baby boomers. Yeah. They're before baby. Aren't mm-hmm. Trump's 79.
Yeah.
So he's close to being. So he's not a baby boomer. Well, was he born in if he was born in 46, I think he would be because he's
born June of 46.
OK, so he is the oldest of the baby boomers.
Yes, right on the cusp.
And Biden might not have been a baby boomer. Isn't Biden?
Biden's older, right?
Biden's, I think, a year older, maybe. So it's close. So he might have been 45. But how about that? No Gen X or millennial presidents. America's 42nd and 43rd and current presidents were all born in the same year, 46. I guess I could have read that. Baby boomers are holding on to their houses, and they control a disproportionate amount of wealth. Even in Hollywood, many older, generally male stars are still dominating the silver screen. Tom Cruise, George Clooney, and Brad Pitt, who I regret to inform you is indeed a boomer. So it really is an old. I'm feeling good for my generation, man. We're still hanging in there.
You're still crushing it.
We are still crushing
it. You're beyond hanging in there, you greedy bunch of jerks. Won't give up anything. You won't let us millennials or Gen Xers or any of us do anything.
Well, I
can't
guess,
buy a house, can't take a job, nothing, you greedy bunch of...
I guess I don't understand why we've elected such old presidents, though. I mean, Biden and Trump. You know, I mean, I got to say, Trump doesn't seem old, does he? A little bit, maybe.
Sometimes.
I get forgettable.
Sometimes.
About stuff.
When you compare him to his predecessor, it's night and day.
No, you're right. His predecessor was, a lot of people say he was clueless. I don't know if he was. Probably was at the end, but that's probably why he didn't get elected. But anyway, I think baby boomers, hey, man, we're here to stay. Not forever.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see about that boomer.
When we come back, we're going to talk about Saturday Night Live. And I mean, I'm a big fan of Saturday Night Live. How about you? We tape it. So I have not seen this episode yet.
Okay.
I've probably got like three or four, because a lot of times at Saturday night, by that time, I'm already sleeping. Sometimes I'm not. But usually I've had a few cocktails and fall asleep. But Saturday Night Live, for those of you that don't know, it's going to offend you. That's the whole point of the show. Nikki Glaser, if you didn't know, she's I think she's kind of a right, doesn't she kind of come off as being a little right wing sometimes? I think she's a little political. She's very attractive. She's fearless. And that's the way I like my comedians. Like, for example, if you watch Ricky Gervais.
Yes.
Any Ricky Gervais HBO comedy special, it's everything is on the plate. Everything.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, every terrible thing you could think about. He talks about, and I'm just going to say, if you watch it, there's something he does about what he would do for a pony that you won't even believe. Okay. And I'm sitting there watching that on a plane and I'm laughing because that's comedy. He takes the most, and so Nikki Glaser is very much that way. Saturday Night Live is very much that way. That's why it's on at 11 o'clock at night or whatever it is. 10:30, I guess, our time, 11:30 Eastern time. And people still get offended. You know, don't watch the show then. I don't see this thing. So Nikki Glaser, you have some clips from this.
Yep.
And if you're easily offended, you know, turn off the road, you know, turn off the radio. That's fine. But I find this sort of stuff very funny. So let's just see a couple of the jokes that she did in her monologue last Friday.
Every time you go to a women's restroom, a public women's restroom, and you sit in the stall, there's always a poster on the back of the stall that's asking you if you're being trafficked. Women, we have these, right? Yes, yes. They're in every stall. They're in every world language. I mean, English is really tiny, and it's like, you wish. But it's like... men's restrooms do not have these signs. I don't know what signs you have. Maybe, like, do you have signs that are like, want a slave? Like, text traffic to 6969.
People didn't like that one.
No, I hadn't heard that one.
No, yeah.
What's the next one?
Well, the next one is when we got into that, you know, that very...
Does this get into the bath?
Yes. Okay. Yes, yes.
So let's go. I want to go back and hear this one again. I got to hear this one. Can you go back and play it again?
The one I just played? Sure.
Yeah. I just want to break it down.
Every time you go to a women's restroom, a public women's restroom, and you sit in the stall, there's always a poster on the back of the stall that's asking you if you're being trafficked.
Stop.
Women,
that.
We have these.
Have you ever heard of that before?
Yes.
Oh, you have?
Yeah.
That's the first I've heard of it.
I've seen them actually in men's restrooms, too. You'll see like a sign, not necessarily about trafficking, but like if you're in an abusive relationship or something like that, you can... you know, pull off this slip and call this number, email this number.
So maybe, well, she's going to mention now, which we already heard, she mentions what could be in the men's bathroom.
Yes. They're in every stall. They're in every world language. I mean, English is really tiny and it's like, you wish. But it's like... men's restrooms do not have these signs. I don't know what signs you have. Maybe like, do you have signs that are like, want a slave? Like, text traffic to 69.
There it is. There's want a slave. So she's... I find that funny. I mean, I'm sure, but a lot of people on this and other jokes didn't have. Now we got to go to this is the Kahuna one, I think. Is this the only other one you got? Or you
yes.
Gonna, okay, let's go to this one.
Yes.
He was 4 and it was very cute. And my sister was like, he can take a shower with you. It's fine. He does it with us. And I'm like, okay, that's fine for you guys. But are you really okay with like an adult showering with your child? Like maybe it's okay if you like come and supervise. And she was like, why? And I was like, because what if I molest him? And she was like, would you? And I was like, no, I would never. That's disgusting. But that's what I'd say if I was gonna. You know, like, they don't trust anyone. I don't even trust myself. I don't want to go in there. How do you become a pedophile? You don't get to choose what you're into, dude. What if it's one of those things you don't know you like till you get in there and you're like, well, this is my thing. And then it opens up a part of my brain. No, no, no.
You know what? I will tell you this. When I was working at the Minnesota Supreme Court as a law clerk, we dealt with a case that had to do with a pedophile. Mm-hmm. And it's called Linehan. And I think I've talked about this on the air before. Because while that was funny, she's actually right on that position. Meaning, pedophiles can't help themselves. That's really the point, that they can't. And so what happened in this case was, this Linehan was a pedophile. He gets convicted. And his lawyer was pleading he's not guilty because he's by reason of not insanity, but because the whole point of reason of insanity is you can't stop yourself from doing it.
Sure.
You can't stop. And they had all these medical books and mental health books that were looking at it. And he said, the court wouldn't let him do that. They said, nope, we're throwing that out. That's not valid. You can control yourself, blah, blah, blah. Well, he serves his 15 years or whatever it was. Now his sentence is up, and Dennis Linehan, who's a pedophile, who can't control himself, and that was his argument that's what his lawyer made as an argument. He should have gone to some sort of a institution that would try to treat him, and if he never got healthy, he would stay in that institution the rest of his life.
Mm-hmm.
Now the state says, well, we think that we're going to lock him back up because we're going to lock him up because he's sick, because he can't help himself.
After he served the sentence.
After he served the sentence, and he wanted to do that the first time. And so my judge, I said, you know, the Supreme Court was not going to let this guy out. Okay. So regardless, and I'm not saying they were wrong to do that, but legally they were wrong. Okay. Legally they were wrong because he'd been denied what's called substantive due process. And so I helped my judge draft the dissent. And the dissent is, substantive due process just means when something is not fair. It just seems wrong. And, and the wrong was, he wanted to plead that you chose your poison, you should have let him out. I get why the Supreme Court didn't, so that goes up. Anyway, she kind of hit some, I mean, that's actually a true statement. I mean, that maybe, how do you become a pedophile? You really don't. You just kind of are born that way. That's really the thing. That's why they have to be treated differently than thrown into jail. Well, that took a fun segment down the road to darkness, didn't it? But that's really the case on that. That I get why people don't want, they think, oh, he's getting away with it. No, he's not getting away with it. You put him, it's very important that a pedophile has to be separate from society, but he doesn't have to be in a jail. But he's got to be separate from society because he cannot control himself.
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole point. You get him where he's getting treatment, but you don't treat him like a criminal. That's what you do. So a lot of these cases, when people say, I want to kill this guy, how sick are they? They are sick. There's something going on in their heads that they can't help it. And so, yes, separate them. Get them the hell away from kids. They can't be around any kids. Get them away. And if they had done that the first time, he would have still been he wouldn't have gotten out. He wouldn't have gotten out, and he wouldn't have been anywhere near kids. He never did get out. But now they committed him later. So that's just a little into the law. Saturday Night Live, we talk about it. You watch it every week, pretty much.
I'm rarely live, just because, like you, I might be in bed. But I always, I mean, the next day, it's cold open, monologue, weekend update for sure. And then you kind of see on social media if any of the sketches really pop. So absolutely watch those. And you know what? Nikki Glaser's going to be your host. She's right now the queen of roast comedy. Then the Tom Brady roast kind of catapulted her.
Right.
What do you expect if you're going to watch it and Nikki Glaser, you know what? Don't be mad. Be mad at yourself for watching it, for goodness sake.
It's I'm not a big fan of roasts. Are you? I used to watch those in the day.
Really enjoyed them as a kid. I haven't gotten into them much lately.
But there's always, Nikki Glaser's always on. There's that bald guy who's very
Jeff
funny.
Ross.
Jeff Ross. Yeah. They make the living. Anyway, Jason DeRussia coming up next. Korzenowski was in for Chad today. I'm not scheduled anytime in the future, but stay tuned for Jason DeRussia here on 830 WCCO.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.